we're holding on page 102 in Sota, the top line, middle of voice Kofi Zain. We started talking yesterday, we started learning about the whole concept of Lavoya, that you have to make sure to escort a person or guest in town for at least 4 amos, and it helps protect him from dangers. And we say that the Zikne Ha'ir have to declare that they didn't leave a person without that when they're bringing the Egla Arufa. So continuing on that topic, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Harav LaTalmid, when a Talmud is leaving town and his Rav is going to accompany him, then it should be Ad Ibur Shal'ir. Then he only has to accompany him as far as the Ibur Shal'ir, which is 70 amos and a fraction out after the last house of the city. Yav in Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Tchumen, we said that that area is considered like an extension of the city, and then the Tchum starts getting measured from that. Chover l'chover, when you have one chover accompanying another chover, now chover can mean a friend, and that's in fact how the Rambam learns it, that it just means, in other words, part of two friends. Marsha earlier may imply that it means specifically Tamid Chachamim. Marsha had talked about earlier that the absolute minimum is 4 amos, and here the Gemara is giving a larger amount, so the implication might be that here we're saying for Tamid Chachamim is different. Anyway, add Tum Shabbos, then he should accompany him as far as a Tum Shabbos. Talmud l'Rav, when a Talmud is accompanying his Rav who is leaving town, ein lo shir, then there's no limit how much he has to accompany him. Well, the question is, I mean, practically speaking, there has to be some kind of limit. He can't follow him to his entire destination, v'kama. So how much do we mean by when we say there's no limit? What do we mean by actually no limit? Rav Sheshes ad parsa. So Rav Sheshes says in that case, it doesn't literally mean no limit. It means a parsa, 4 mil, approximately 2.5 or 3 miles. All that applies only if it's not his primary Rebbe. Our Rabbi Muvak, but if it's primary Rebbe, and the Gemara elsewhere defines it's Lomad Rov Chachmose Hemenu, that most of his wisdom and Torah comes from that Rebbe, Gimel Parsois, then he has to be prepared to be Malava him as far as 3 Parsa. The Be'er Sheva, I think it is, comments that we don't find the post of the Rambam brings this whole matter of Lavoya, but the later posts can do not. It's not brought in Shulchan Aruch, etc. So the idea is, one point is that eventually the roads became over time much more dangerous, so a person is not expected to actually put himself in danger in order to be malava the other person. So nevertheless, there was at least the four amos in town, that at least you can do. And as Marisha, as we learned yesterday, as Marisha says, even that has a great effect.
So that person's going by himself, or doing with a group, why does he need
that? So we'll talk about that soon in connection with Alicia. Hold that thought. The Pashnas were saying that it should be, that the Rav should, out of the Kovad Dick, after all, you know, the Talmud is giving something. No, no, I'm saying, but even the Rav to the Talmud, the fact is the Rav sometimes learns something from the Talmud as well, and the Talmud years and Mikulam and all that, right? So,
sure, the Rav goes with him also, right?
That's also true, right? Yeah, yeah. Well, there it's different. There it's because his chayus depends on being with his Rebbe, of the Lemok and Chayusa. Here we're not talking about they're only going to be walking together for 70 amos, but yeah. The concept of a Rav going with the Talmud, it's true, yeah. Okay, fair enough. So the Gemara tells, Rav Kahana Alvi Elit of Shini Ba'ashi Mipum Nara Ad Beit Sinisa De Bovel. One time, Rav Kahana was accompanying Rav Shimi Ba'ashi from Pumnara, the name of a town in Bavel that was all or mostly Jewish, ad Beit Sinisa de Bavel, until an area in the country of Bavel where there were a lot of palm trees growing. Sinisa, Rashi points out, like Gavin Masechta Sukkot, Sinei Har Bazok Shedus, which are a particularly hard type of lulav, so therefore this was a place where a lot of palm trees like that grew. Ki Motu Hasam, the Gemara doesn't say how far that was, but I guess if you lived in that area, you would know. So it doesn't say. But they may have been chaverim, but they may have been chaver to chaver, yeah. So Kim Motu Hossam, when they reached the place, and now Rav Kahana and Rav Shimi are going to be going their separate ways, Omale, so Rav Kahana says to Rav Shimi, Vade Damritu, is it true that I've heard that you say, that you in this area of Bavel say, Hani Beit Sinisa de Bavel, this area with this palm tree, these palm trees that are growing here in this area in Bavel, Isnu Mishne Odomerishin Bad Hashta. Those trees are there already from the time of Odomerishin until now. I've heard you people in this area say that. Is that so, that Yitaka say that? Omalei, sort of Shini answers, it kauton milsa de Rebbe, or de Omer Abyosi Vachanina. You remind me actually that, no, it's not exactly that the trees themselves are from the time of Adam Rishon, but you're reminding me of something that Rabbi Yossi Vachanina said, which we can explain with that what you heard. My dichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk says that Yumi is describing the desert through which the Jewish people went for 40 years, and Hashem is telling the Jewish people, you have to realize the tremendous chesed that I did with you then. What kind of a land was it? Eretz shalai, eretz le ova ba'ish. It was a land where no man had passed through, v'la yoshav adam sham, and no person had dwelled there. Now, why does the pasuk have to be repetitious? If nobody had never passed through this, certainly could have settled there. And if they're not settling there, why would anyone pass through? Marshall takes out that second one, because sure, you could have nobody lives there, but people pass through there. But at least the first one, why does it have to say, like, over ba'ish, and then also v'la yoshav adam sham? Ella, loy malach, so no, what it comes to tell you, the Odom here in the Pasuk is not the generic term for a person, but rather it refers to Odom Arishon. Eretz, Gozer, Allah, Odom Arishon, the Yishuv, whatever place that Odom Arishon decided that it should be a place of settlement, Nisyashva, then that became a settled place, and people eventually, as humanity grew, then they eventually found that place and settled there. Eretz for the Gozer, Allah, Odom Arishon, the Yishuv, a place that Odom did not decide should be a settled area, Lo Nisyashva, never got settled. So therefore, in other words, Rav Shimi is saying, it's not that the actual palm trees are here from the time of Odom Arishon. The fact that this is going to be an area of palm trees without any people living over here, just that there's going to be all these palm trees growing, that was determined by Adam Rishon. And therefore, so we're saying that the trees are there from the time of Adam, not the actual trees, but the fact that this is an area with such trees. Even Yaakov points out, you know, really the word Yishuv itself can mean places where people actually live. It can also mean places where people cultivate crops. So here it means both. In other words, when we say the Yishuv, it can mean that he decided that this is going to be an area where people are actually going to live, or it can mean that he decided that this is going to be a place which is going to be cultivable ground. And here apparently it was neither. Because Adam did not decide that it should be settled, therefore it was never settled. Yeah. And then it works very well with the context of the pasuk that Hashem is telling through the Navi to the Jewish people. You have to realize you were in an area that Adam Rishon two and a half thousand years ago decided is not going to be settled, and Ada Yemezeh, it's a barren wasteland, and here I brought you through it and gave you the mon and everything else you needed to survive. And part of this idea, in other words, is Adam Rishon knew where the various sparks of Kedusha had fallen, and therefore he decided which places are going to be settled, and those are going to be the places where those nitzotzes can be elevated versus where not, and then not. And you have, you know, as the Rebbeim always pointed out anyway, you know, you may have sometimes that nitzotz may remain there for thousands of years waiting that a yid should come by and say a word of Torah or tefillah or make a bracha or what have you. So it's all part of this grand plan. It's all part of this Ratzon Elyon. By the way, the Medrash mentions in this connection, you know, when we have in Parshas Bereishis that the Nachash is talking to Chava, where was Adam at the time? How is it that Adam didn't get involved in the conversation? And one answer is exactly that. He was on this world tour over here, going to the different places, deciding what's going to be with each place. And therefore he wasn't around, and therefore the Nachash realized he had his shot with Chava. Another example of Halvoya, the Gemara says, Rav Mordechai Alveilet of Shimi Ba'ashi, or Rav Ashi, is the version in the printed Gemara, Mehag Grunya Bad Be Kipoi, Va'amilad Be Dura. Rav Mordechai, now Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, I don't know, but Rav Ashi was indeed a Rebbe of Rav Mordechai. And very likely his rabbi Muvhak as well. We find them, and we don't find Rav Mordechai that often in Shas, but when we do, he's obviously a member of Rav Ashi's Beis Medrash, so maybe Rav Ashi is his rabbi Muvhak, or maybe not, but whatever. So here it's clearly a Talmud accompanying his rebbe, and he accompanied him from Hagrunya to Beit Kifoy, Va'amilad Beit Dura, some say until Beit Dura. So again, in other words, we're talking about a considerable distance, as we said before, that a Talmud has to be Malava his rab. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yochanan Meshum Rav Meir, Kol she'ene malve umislave. Kol she'ene malave umislave. What did I say? Kol she'ene malave umislave. Anyone who doesn't accompany a traveler or does not be accompanied, we'll talk about what that means in a second, ke'ilu shofech damim, that's as if he's spilling blood. In other words, it can cause actual bloodshed. Now, malava is easy enough to understand, because in other words, like as we've been saying throughout the sugya, you have to be malava, a person, and otherwise he's being exposed to danger. What's the mislava business? And in fact, the proof that the Gemara is going to bring over here from the story of Elisha is on the face of it only that they weren't malava him, not mislava. So there's a few different possibilities. The different malava is to accompany him. Mislava is to be accompanied. So in other words, you have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven is traveling, so he's walking to a certain place. So Shimon is going to be malava him. Reuven would be the mislava. He's the one who's being accompanied by a person from the town, by Shimon from the town. So now we're saying, if he's not malava or mislava, kilo shofech damim. Now, the story we're going to have with Elisha, they weren't malava him. What's the, with the mislava, how is it his fault? Nobody wants to accompany him. How is it his fault? So Marsha explains like this here. You were just asking about what happens if he has another escort. Well, Marsha says that's what it means. And we're going to bring an example from Elisha over here. You think Elisha was just traveling by himself? But Pashas, he had other people with him. So he doesn't need their Lavoya. Nevertheless, they should have given him some, and the fact that they didn't, as the Gemara is going to say, caused loss of life. So therefore, that's mislava, kol she'ein malava, umislava. It means, in other words, when a person is not malava, but even when the person is already being mislava by others, nevertheless, you should join in the lavoya as well. That's how Marsha learns. On the side of here, Yad Yosef brings an explanation from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. We learned yesterday that the Shurban and Levi had said that what if a person Taka doesn't have Lavoya? What if there is nobody who wants to accompany him? Then we said he should learn Torah, and the Torah will protect him and give him Chaim B'chesed, like we say in Tfilas HaDerech. Well, very well then, what the Gemara means over here, if a person is not malava, or if there's nobody available to be malava him, and he's at least not mislava, he doesn't accompany himself by learning Torah, ke'ilu shofech damim. So therefore that justifies, that's another way of justifying the meaning of mislava. The two malachim that a person has. Okay, if he has them, he has them. If he doesn't, he doesn't. I don't know. Besides, you know, it helps to have gashmiistic people with him for the various reasons that we talked about at the beginning of the sugya of the importance of it. And then Ben Yehoyada says a more balabatish answer. Einam eslava means that he refuses the halvoya, that they offer him lavoya, and he says, it's fine, I don't need it. So then we're saying that, well, so in all those cases, kilo shefach dam. She umole livuhu anshi yirichai le'elisha. Now, if the people of Yirichai had accompanied Elisha when he was leaving their town, he never would have incited bears against the young children. What happened? The psukim in Melachim tell us the story in Melachim days, Perek days, right shortly after Elisha had become the new head Novi, after Eliyahu had gone up to Shemayim, the people of Yericho come to Elisha and they say, we have a problem. As the Gemara is going to quote the pasuk further on, it's a beautiful city, it's a nice place to live, but the water over here is bad and it's causing diseases and then miscarriages and whatnot. So Elisha tells them to take him to the spring, and he throws some salt into the spring, and he says, now the Eibishter says, he says in the Eibishter's name, and Nevuah, from now on, the water of the spring is going to be pure and healthy, and nobody's ever going to have any problem with it. And sure enough, by Yerofa Mayim Ada Yemazeh, it's healed Ada Yemazeh. Nowadays, even you have that spring, it's an Arab territory, and it's still a very fresh spring. It provides, unfortunately, for our cousins, quote unquote, but yeah, it's still there. Anyway. Then the pasuk goes on to say, and the fact that he used salt, by the way, is al derech like you had by Mara, where it says, you know, Moshe, Hashem told Moshe to use a bitter tree. This is always how the Eivishta does that he heals with, you would think is the very opposite. You'd think salt would make the water worse, and here, Adarabba, the Eivishta heals with that. Anyway, then the psukim go on. As Elisha is leaving town, some young men, we're going to talk about the details, we're walking, we're following him and making fun of him, and alei kereach, get out of here, you baldy. And the pasuk says he turned around, he saw them, he cursed them in Hashem's name, and two bears came out of the forest and killed 42 of them. So now the Gemara is saying, had the people of Yericho accompanied Elisha, then none of this would have happened. Because, for one thing, those people would have told those young men to be quiet and not to insult the Navi. So for that and several other reasons, in other words, they should have accompanied him. Ion Yaakov mentions another point as well. The phrasing of the pasuk seems to indicate that Elisha was actually lost. The pasuk didn't know the way, and then these boys came and started shepherding him. Had people accompanied him, they would have showed him the right way in the first place, and the bear and the boys would have never had their opportunity. So Shenema, the pasuk says, "Vayal Misham Beisel." He's going up from Yerichai to Beisel. Vuhu Oyla Baderech, as he's going up on the road, and literally going up. By the way, Yerichai is a few hundred feet below sea level. Beisel is in the mountains of Eretz Yisrael, so it's actually quite a change in elevation. Anyway, he's going up on, he's walking upward on the road. Some little boys came out from the city. The Gemara will explain soon why they're called the Orim Ketanim. By Skalser boy, and they were making fun of him. By Yom Lula, and they were telling him, Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach. Go up, baldy, go up, bald. Now, Poshet Pshat, you would say it means that Poshet, he was bald. And there are Mephoshim who explain. You know, we find that Eliyahu is described in the previous Perek as Ish Baal Seir. He was a hairy person. So some of the Mephoshim explain, like they're looking at the Chitzonius of things. Look, how are you a worthy successor to Eliyahu when he was covered with hair and you're bald, so you must not be of his caliber, Sometimes people look at Chitzonius like that. But the Gemara doesn't want to learn that way. The Gemara wants to understand that them calling him Kereach has another meaning. Marshall points out, it is true that being bold is something of an embarrassment, but why would the Pasuk quote them twice? Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach. So it means there's another dimension of it as well. So Kereach, they're calling him bold. She krachta aleinu asamokim. You made the place bold for us. Because what happened was, until now, the water there was bad. So how are the people, you have a whole city of Yericho, how are they managing over there without good water? So these boys and others like them were being vasetregers and bringing water to the town and selling it for a nice profit. Now that Elisha had healed the water, now they lost that, so now they're resentful of him for that. So now you made the place bold, meaning unprofitable for us. Now, why does the Pasuk call them Na'orim and Ketanim? Na'orim would usually suggest young men, as in other words, Maharsho says, it would mean after the age of Shtei Cyrus, after the age of Bar Mitzvah. Ketanim would suggest ages younger than that. So they can't be both. So what does it mean? Omer of Elazar, Na'orim, they're called Na'orim, showing Na'orim min ha-mitzvahs. They were empty of mitzvahs. Ketanim, and they're called Ketanim, showing the Ketanei Amona, because they had little emuna in Hashem. Here they're all concerned that their source of parnosa is gone, because now they're not going to sell water over there anymore, and they should have realized that Eibishter is the one who gives parnosa, and not, and Hashem can find them a different way of parnosa. So the terms Na'orim and Ketanim are both meant for Jerusha. To tell us about the different problems that they had. The Masnisa Tana and a Braisa, we learn a little differently. Na'orim Hoyu, they were in fact young men above the age of Bar Mitzvah, otherwise Pashtus so the Elisha wouldn't have punished them in the first place. Ubizbizu Atzmim Ketanim, but they acted in a degraded way about themselves like children. An interesting explanation, from the Stipler about what that means is, so you know, the Chovas HaLevavos explains, he says you have 10 levels of bitochen that a person may go through in his lifetime. Hopefully a person eventually reaches the 10th of them, which is to have an absolute bitochen in Hashem, but you have stages that a person goes through in his life up until that point. The first level of bitochen is a baby, he knows nothing other than his mother's breast. Then when he's a little older, he's not just her milk, but b'chlal that she takes care of him. A little older, he realizes his father supports the family, b'chola b'chola, and he climbs up in realizing what there is to trust in. And eventually, around the 5th or 6th level, he starts realizing he has to trust in the Eibishter, and then he works his way through different levels of Emunah and Bitachon over there. Well then, these boys were apparently stuck on one of the lower levels, were saying they thought that their parnosa comes from the water, so it's making the same mistake as like a kid who thinks that everything comes from his mother, and therefore we're saying bizbizu atzmam ketanim, they act in a degraded way like children, where they should have been on a more mature level to realize that's not how it works. So the Gemara says, maskif for Rabbi Yosef. But Rabbi Yosef says, why do you have to say that the word na'orim refers to the fact that they were na'orim min ha-mitzvahs, that they were empty of mitzvahs, and we're saying that they were in fact na'orim, they were young men? Why the dilmal shem mekoimam? Maybe you could say they're na'orim, they're named that after the name of the place they came from. Niloksiv, after all, you have the same way as you have an apostle later on in Melachim, it's in Haftorah, Parshas Tezriah, with the story of Naaman, Ba'aram Yotzu Gdudim, Aram at various times had formed bands, they had like little units of raiders and terrorists who would invade parts of Eretz Yisrael, Ba'yishbu me'Eretz Yisrael Na'arak Tana, and they captured from Eretz Yisrael a Na'arak Tana, and the apostle goes on to say she was a maid for Naaman's wife, and she was the one who suggested that Naaman should go to Elisha, and the whole story developed from there. Now, again, you have the same question. Same question. Is your Naira or Ketana? Naira is above the age of Bas Mitzvah and Shtei Cyrus. Ketana is below that. And Omaraptos Katana Damin Neuron. It means she was a Katana, she was a young girl. And she came from a town called Neuron. Now, Tosfos, where is Neuron? Tosfos points out there's actually a place in Divrei Yomim that mentions in the territory of Shevet Ephraim, it mentions a place called Neuron, the actual pasuk, because we have it. And Divrei Yomim actually says Na'aron. But whatever, the point is, in other words, this girl was from that place, Na'aron or Neuron, and she was a Tana, she was a little girl. One point to highlight that would be that even though she was so little and completely cut off from her family and living among the Goyim, she still retained such an emunah in the Eidishter that she knew that that he's the only one who could help Naaman through the Navi. Anyway, the point is, so the same way as Nara over there means a girl from Neuron or Naaron, the same way over here, maybe the Neorim Ketanim are also from Neuron. The answer is Hosam Lemafarish Makoima, because there it just says they captured her from Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't say the name of the town. Here it says they came from Yericho, and Orim Ketanim Yotzu Minair, they came out of the city of Yericho, so we have every reason to believe that they actually lived in the city rather than they lived in a different place in Neuron. So therefore we have a right to doubt, therefore we have a reason to doubtion that the word Neorim over here actually refers to their quality, that they were Neorim and Amitzvahs, that they were empty of Mitzvahs, or that they were Neorim, that they were young men. The Gemara goes on. The pasuk says Vayifen Achrav. So now, when they were yelling at him, Alei Kareach, the pasuk continues. Elisha turned around by Yurem and he saw them by Kavalim Hashem Hashem, and he cursed them in Hashem's name. Now the question is, my Vayurem, what does this word Vayurem mean? And the problem with it is, in other words, first of all, Marshal explains. The question is, listen, it's a law in the Torah to curse a fellow Yid. So what does it mean that he? So what is it? So why would he do that? And further on, the Gemara is going to talk about. I don't know if we'll get to it today, but further on, the Gemara is going to talk about that. In fact, later on, Elisha suffered for that. He ended up being sick for a while for that, because even first, the Gemara is going to talk about over here how these young men were completely void of mitzvahs, and they were even conceived in a bad way, and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, you don't do that to a yid. But in any case, so the question is, what exactly is the vayirin? Also, the fact that it says vayifan achrab, if he turned around, obviously he saw them, so what's the point? So, Omer Rav, ro'o mamish. So Rav says it actually means that he saw them. So the vayikalim, Marashah says, doesn't actually mean that he actually pronounced a curse against them. It means that he'd be over the issue, and he wouldn't want to do that. It means just his seeing had an effect on them. To the Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, of Shimon Gamlielimer, kol mokim shenosnu chachamim neihem, wherever the chachamim put their eyes negatively against something, boy in it, oy misa, oy oyni, either the person is going to die, or they're going to become poor. We have examples in various places, in Shas, Nosin, Ein, of Boy Benasa Gal Shalat Samos, and other such things. We have the story of the Rashbi and Rabbi Lazar when they first left the cave and everything that they're looking at is getting burnt up. So the same way over here, then, Elisha doesn't have to say anything against them. All he has to do is give them a look, and right away the Eidish just stands up for him and sends out the bears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sadiq's eyes went to the person, yeah.
That was
good. That was awesome. Oh, interesting. I think you mentioned that before, but yeah, it's a nice vote. Now he's able to reveal the Atmos and be able to see it. Very good. And that's the Nosan Ein of Boy, a vote from, you said from your Shver, Nosan Ein of Boy, on a deeper level, it means that Tzadik gave this other person who he was talking with over there his eyes, his ability to see things through the eyes of the Tzadik, and the result was Gal Shalat Sama. It's a revelation of Atmos. Nice for it. Anyway, but in the Poshet chat, it means the Chacham have this ability because, you know, the Tzaddikim, they control their eyes. They're careful with Lois HaSurach, Levavchem, V'achrei Nechem, so therefore their eyes have tremendous power. So according to Rav, that's what happened over here. Ushmul Omar, Shmuel says, Rosh Kulam Nisabra Behen Imam B'Yem HaKippurim, he saw with Ruach HaKodesh that all of them, their mothers had become pregnant with them on Yom Kippur. One of the things that's also on Yom Kippur, of course, is Tashmash Hamitzah. So it means, in other words, like even their conception was already in a wrong way.
Wasn't their fault.
What? Wasn't their fault, but still, it means, in other words, they're born already with these tendencies towards that they're going to go the wrong way, and it may not be possible to save them. Marshall points out, you know, I mean, there are other serious Yisurim that could have been conceivably involved as well, but evidently Shmuel had the Kabbalah that it was this particular Isser of having relations on Yom Kippur. So the point is, in other words, not that that itself causes them a misimishona, but it makes them more susceptible that therefore now when they go and insult the tzaddik, Elisha, then there's less of an ability to be melamed zchus on them. So that's the second explanation. Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha blurris ra'alahem ka'ibri chavim. Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha says he saw that they were wearing a chup, like the way the goyim do, a lock of hair that the goyim would grow long, sometimes in honor of their getchkes. It actually came up in today's Zafayomi as well, talking about where every so often a goy would shave off that blurris and make himself a personal chogger in honor of his getchke. But here we're saying they were wearing their hairstyle like the way the goyim do, meaning, in other words, again, that they don't have even the outer tzura of a yid, and therefore he's not able to be melamed zchus on them, or he doesn't want to be melamed zchus on them, as the case may be. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, ro she'en behem lachluchis shom mitzvah. Rabbi Yochanan says the fourth thing, he saw that there's not even a moisture of mitzvahs in them. That he saw they have no trace of a mitzvah at all. So the question is, okay, but v'dum v'zarayu ne'vahava. Still, maybe their children eventually would do mitzvahs. No, he saw that neither they nor their potential future children would have any lachluchas shel mitzvah until the end of all generations. So therefore, there's not really anything to be melamed zchus on them. The Rif mentions over here an interesting idea from the Kli Yoker on Nevi'im. The quotes that you see over here, he mentions Maharshal. That's not the regular Maharshal, Reb Shlomo Luria. This is actually Reb Shmuel Laniado, who wrote Kli Yoker on Nevi'im. You have an edition. There's also Kli Yoker on Chumash by yet a different author. But anyway, so he explains they're all darshaning from the word Vayirim. One of them is Vayirem. We darshan Vayar. The Ben Yehoyada brings a number of these as well. Vayirem is Vayar Ein. He saw their mothers, the Ruach HaKodesh. He saw their mothers had become pregnant with them in a way that was also. The blurith is Vayar Ein. He said Vayar Ein, Ein Meloshin Uma. That he saw them acting like the Goyish or like the Goyim and wearing hairstyles like them. Ben Yehoyada points out also that the Emurim particularly were noted for wearing that kind of hairstyle of blurith, and the word Vayirem is the same letters as Emuri. And then the Kli Yoker continues. Rabbi Yochanan, who says that no lachluchas from mitzvah, is vayirem ra'im. He saw if to see if do they even have a trace of a mitzvah, and he couldn't find any. Yaakov gives a number of reasons why Taka bears of all things, why the Eved should punish them through bears. So bears, to where we find it already in Sefer Daniel, and the Gemara mentions it in a few places, bears are the symbol of the Persians. So now you have. First of all, the Gemara mentions elsewhere the Persians. One of the good qualities is the sneer stick when it comes to Tashmish. So therefore, so now we're saying their mothers were the opposite of that. So therefore, that's one reason for them to be attacked by bears. He saw that they're wearing a bluris because the Persians do that kind of thing. They also, the Gemara mentions, they grow their hair long, so they're acting like a Persian. So they get punished by the symbol of the Persian, the bear, and the lachlokas from mitzvah. Like you want to mention that the Persians are destined, are more so than many of the other surrounding nations, are mekudoshim, zmonim legehenim. They're destined to go to Gehenim, and therefore, so their symbol is the appropriate one to attack these children that ain't ram lachluchas from mitzvah. Yeah. There we're talking about the Persian goyim, but here we're saying that these Jewish children, unfortunately, were getting to be like that as well. Well, the pasuk says Vayikal lem b'shem Hashem. It says that Elisha cursed them in the name of Hashem. Vatetzena shtayim dubim min hayar b'gomer, and then two bears came out of the forest and killed 42 of them. Rav and Shmuel argue what exactly happened over here. Chad Omer Ness, one says there was a Ness, there was a single level Ness. Vachad Omer Ness b'soich Ness, and the other one says it was actually a Ness within a Ness, namely. Manda Omer Ness, the opinion that says that it was a single level Ness, he says, Yar Hava, there had been a forest there before, all along, Dubim Lehavu. All it was is there hadn't yet been any bears in the forest, and now the Abishta made a Ness, and all of a sudden there are bears there. Manda Omer Ness Vesech Ness, whereas the opinion that says it was a Ness Vesech Ness, Lo Yar Hava Velo Dubim Havu. Before that, there had not been a forest, and there had not been any bears, and now all of a sudden the Abishta created on the spot over there, or transported over there, there's a forest and there's bears. In modern Hebrew, sometimes they have the expression Lo Dubim Velo Yar, to mean, you know, like in Yiddish, you say Nishke Stoigen, Nishke Floigen, it never happened. That's not what the Gemara means over here. Rav or Shmuel, as the case may be, are not saying it didn't happen, they're saying Faker, everything was created on the spot over there, yeah. So the Gemara asks, "V'lehevu dubim v'lehevu yar." So what? V'lehevu yar. According to that opinion, if there was no forest over there, why does the Eibush have to create a forest on the spot? Let there just be bears. And the answer is mishum debeisti, because they would be scared. Rashi explains that the bears would be afraid. The bears, their natural habitat is the forest. So if they're out in the open, they're going to be too nervous to attack. And since in this case they need to, so therefore Hashem had to create for them a forest in order for them to be comfortable, to feel like they're in their natural habitat. Ion Yaakov mentions in this connection, it says in connection with Machas Oroiv, that it says that the Gamha, it says the land of Mitzrayim is going to be filled with the various creatures that make up the plague of Oroiv, the Gamha Adama Shehem Aleo, and also the land on which they are. Which is there's an explanation on that, that it means that Hashem, for each kind of animal transported to Mitzrayim, the type of land, the type of habitat that animal lives in nature in that way. In other words, that is then the same idea. That way each animal feels comfortable and is ready to attack the Mitzrayim. Why two bears? I don't think it says, but maybe one male, one female, I don't know. I once saw in that connection a cute thing, and there's some novel that came out a few years ago, based on the events of the time of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, and then in the Makkas of all and all that. So they picture at one point one of the characters over there seeing there's this strange cold kind of sand together with the polar bears. So that's Rashi's explanation. On the other hand, Marsha explains that no, that the EC actually refers to not to the bears, but rather to the people. Marsha explains like this: listen, if this was a place where bears are commonly found, then these young men wouldn't have been going there in the first place. And for that matter, how would we know that they attacked because of Elisha's curse? They attacked because B'derech HaTeva, it's in a place of bears, and it's a place where it's dangerous. So now the Gemara is saying, if there had not been a forest over there, and then all of a sudden the bears showed up, the children would be scared, and they would run away. So therefore, there had to be a forest, according to either opinion, there had to be a forest over there, so they wouldn't see the bears coming. According to one opinion, the forest had been there before, and according to the other opinion, Hashem created it there on the spot. Okay. The Gemara goes on. The Pasuk says, they ripped open 42 of these young men, of these children. So why dafka 42? Omer of Yosef, Rav Hanina, b'shvil mem beis korbanos, shehikrib balak malach moyav, 42 korbanos, balak malach moyav brought, in his attempt to curse the Jewish people, for that, hufku miyisrael, mem beis yolodim, for that 42 Jewish children, were split open by these bears. Meaning, as Marsha says, listen, the whole point, Balak was trying to bring these korbanos in order to get Hashem to listen to Bilam and curse the Jewish people, and then many, many Jews would be killed in Rahman al-Islam. It didn't work. But now there was room eventually for that to be chal many generations later. And the idea is, in other words, like as we were saying, since the Gemara was saying before, that they were conceived by Aveira, and they had no trace of mitzvahs, and they were acting like the goyim, so like there was nothing. In other words, the idea is, there's an explanation that Balak was trying to curse the Jewish people, and he failed on all those three counts. They have mitzvahs, they're careful with kedusha, of husband and wife, and they act differently than the goyim. In his times, therefore, his klolos were not able to be effective. But now, in a generation like this, when you have these children who are, as we said before, are lacking all those three things, then there was room for that klolos. There was room for that to be chal, and therefore that's what happened now. Yeah.
First in the Kufiyat Ches, it says tenekes.
Yeah.
Give them the tenekes.
Right.
And we call them the orim and tamen.
And now we're calling them yelodim. Right. Four different titles. Yeah. I don't know.
They are grown up.
I don't know.
Four different levels,
I guess. Yeah. So Na'orim and Ketanim, the Gemara has already darshin. Tinoikos is just the Gemara's usual word for children, regardless of age. And Yolodim, why the Pasuk over here calls them, called them Na'orim and Ketanim, and here it calls them Yolodim, because again, we said Na'orim and Ketanim, and for a drasha, Yolodim is poshut to tell us they were young. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? So you're telling me the result of Balak's korbanos was, and his reward basically was, that eventually his evil plans were able to come true and Jewish children were killed? Va'amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav. But we find there was a different reward that Balak got for his korbanos. La'olam yasik adam b'torah mitzvahs. A person should always occupy himself and involve himself with Torah and mitzvahs. The afapi shaloi l'shma, even he's doing shaloi l'shma, shemitoch shaloi l'shma bo l'shma, because from doing shaloi l'shma, eventually he'll come to do l'shma, or yeah, the explanation of chesidus mitoch within the shaloi l'shma, because the yid has a nefesh elokis, so within that already, on the surface, there's only the shaloi l'shma, but deep down there's really the l'shma. And as Alter Rebbe puts it, in Tanya lo yudachem menu yudachem, the gilgal zeh, the gilgal acher, eventually it's going to end up being l'shma. So here we're talking about it applies to a goy, Bolak, but in other words, the shebeschem, membeis korbanos, shirikri, Bolak malach mayav, because of Bolak's 42 korbanos, zoch of a yotzim menu rus, he had the schus that rus descended from him, and in turn, she yotzim menu shloima, and in turn, Shlomo was the great great grandson of Rus. Shekostav Bey, and it says about him that he brought many more korbanos. Elof Oilus Yala Shlomo, when he first became king, and he goes to Gibbon, which is where the Mishkan was located at the time, he brought 1,000 korbanos at once. So where's the relationship between Rus and Balak? Rus bita shel Egloin. Rus was the daughter of Egloin. Now Tosfos elsewhere says, not necessarily literally the daughter. Egloin, Melech Moav, was near the beginning of the time of the Shoftim. He was the oppressor of the Jewish people in the time of Ehud ben Gera, about a couple of decades after the Jewish people had entered Eretz Yisrael. Meanwhile, Rus and Boaz, the Gemara mentions that Boaz was Ivson, who was one of the later Shoftim. So you're talking like 200 odd years later. So it was not literally a daughter, but in other words, a descendant. Ben Bnoi Shal Melech Shal Balak Melech Mayav. And Eglon, in turn, is the son or the grandson or whatever, the descendant of Balak Melech Mayav Hoysa. That's the family that Ruth came from. So we see, in other words, that the reward that Balak got was that from him came Ruth and the whole dynasty of the Jewish king, of the kings of Yehuda, which includes also the fact that they brought many korbanos. So what are you talking about with the 42 children? And by the way, Tosfos in a number of places in Shas makes the point that the Gemara, there are other Gemaras that say that when a person is learning Torah, shaloi l'shma, then it's a very, very bad thing, actually, and noyach l'shenech l'shoyoseh, and other expressions like that. And Tosfos explains in a variety of places that there's a difference whether a person is learning or doing the mitzvah l'kanto, in order to use it to attack other people or to cheat or otherwise take advantage of other people. Now, on the face of it, Balak is bringing his korbanos for just that. Marshall explains elsewhere that since Balak is bringing them, after all, he was afraid, Vayogo Moav Ne'am, they're afraid that the Jewish people are going to attack them, so therefore it can't really be considered lakanto. He has, in other words, a certain rational excuse for what he's doing, and therefore that raises it to the level of a shaloi l'shma, of the kind that he's doing it for covered or what have you, which is the kind that the Gemara says, and that's a positive thing, and or it's at least not such a negative thing, and mitzvah shaloi l'shma bo l'shma. Anyway, so which was Balak's reward? That Shlomo descends from him through Rus, or the 42 children? The answer is Tavosi Mira Spolahavori. It's both, really. The fact is, he had the intention for evil, and therefore that had to come true in some ways. So in other words, it's both. On the one hand, he brought Korbanos, but on the other hand, the fact is, he was doing all of this in order to attack the Jewish people, so therefore, so each one had its effect later on. The positive one came out through Shlomo, and the negative one came out with these 42 children. The positive was that Ruth was Balak's descendant, and in turn from her comes Shlomo, who brought many more korbanos to Hashem. In other places, by the way, where the Gemara mentions this point, it doesn't even mention the part about Shlomo and his korbanos. It just says that Ruth descended from Balak and from Eglon, and that alone is a big thing, that Ruth, the great Sadekus, the great Geodas, came from them. That's true, yeah. The pasuk says, now going back to the story with Elisha and the people of Yericho. So how did the story start? By Yomru Anshei Ir Elisha, the people of Yericho say to Elisha, Hine Nam Moshe Va'ir Tov, look please, the place, the settlement of the city is very good, Kasher Adoni Roya, as my master sees. By the way, we have Yericho was destroyed in the times of Yeshua, and Yeshua had made a klala that nobody should ever rebuild it. Well, later on, you find Chiel Beisaeli rebuilt it and lost all his children for that. So once it's rebuilt, then people are allowed to settle over there as they did. So the place is a very nice place to live. Kasha Adoni Roya, as my master, as you, the Novi, see. Va'oretz v'mayim roim, but the water is bad. Va'oretz mishakolas, and the land, therefore, is causing women to miscarry. Well, they're not so great about the place if the water is causing diseases and miscarriages and whatnot. So how are they calling it? Moshe Va'ir Toiv. To be sure, Maharshal says, fine, there might be all kinds of advantages in the place, but a person needs one of the most basic things a person needs is water. So if they don't have good water over there, what good are all the other milas of the place? This is an example where a place appears beautiful and graceful to those who live there. Even B'derech HaTeva, the place is it objectively is bad, but nevertheless, the Eivishka causes it, but the people who live there feel that it's good. We learned before that Adam Rishon decided each place where it was going to be settled. But Adam, Maharshal points out, Adam did not decide who's going to live there. So Hashem causes that there should be a certain chain for this place, that the people that Hashem decided are going to live there feel a certain chain for it, it has chain in their eyes, and therefore they settle over there. The idea being, again, that this way they're the ones who the Eivishka decided are going to be Mevarer what's in the place. So they could call it Moshe Ve'ir Tov, even though any outsider would have said, what are you talking about? This is a horrible place to live, but they didn't see it that way. That's what Gemara is going to mention that now. Amar Rav Chanina or Rabbi Yochanan, Gimel Chinoy Sein. There were three kinds of grace like that, that are Lamaila Mederech HaTeva, that the Eibishter decided, that the Eibishter arranged, that this is how it's going to be. Chen Mokam Al Yoshua, the first one we just said, that the place appears graceful to those who live, and beautiful to those who live there, even if any outsider would say it's not so. V'chein Ishal Baila, that a woman is beautiful and graceful to her husband, even, and Ashi says, even if objectively she's ugly, she still finds favor and beauty in her husband's eyes. V'chein Mekach Al Mekocha, and the third one is when a person buys something, everybody else might say it's a piece of junk, but he's going to feel to himself that it's something good, and that it's something good and beautiful. This kind of thing has relevance in halacha as well. You know, we have the famous machlokas v'shama v'silo, when a couple is getting married, ketzad menachem lifnei kala, v'shama im kala kamos shehi. V'shama says you don't exaggerate her praises. However she is, if she's plain, then find some other good midah of hers or something. And v'silo says no, kala noa v'chastoda, because regardless, to you she may not be noa v'chastoda, but to her husband she is, and therefore there's a truth to that. And the same way with mekach as well. If you're going to have, let's say, you know, the guy bought something and it's still within the return window, and you're going to tell him, you know, you got gypped over here, you got a piece of junk, go return it, mela. But if he can't return it anyway, then he may as well, then by all means, halacha, praise it to him rather than making him feel bad that he got a bad deal.
There would be total chaos
in particular. As far as wives, yeah, Hashem decided, bas ploini leploini, and therefore Hashem makes that a person's zivug is attractive and beautiful to him. In the same way Hashem also decided, sada ploini leploini, and therefore the same thing, there has to be a so to speak, Hashem interferes, l'mayla meder hateva, to make it that it appears beautiful and attractive to him, even though everybody else might not see it that way. Yeah. There's an interesting, what? There's an interesting vort on that also, a chassidish vort on it, that says the chen mokam al yoshvav and chen ishal baila also refers to the relationship between the Eibishter and us. We're the mokam, so we're the mokam of Elokus in the world, and we're the isha to Hashem's baal. So even if we're not really where we should be, but chen mokam al yoshvav and chen ishal baila, and the Eibishter still sees us favorably, even though maybe we're not up to that. Yeah. Well, children, a young man or whatever, yeah. Yeah. Right. But we're saying, in other words, even at least, we're saying they were Na'orim after all. We're saying they were young men. They were already overage by mitzvah. So they should have at least had Bachlofos from mitzvah. Okay, they're right. Well, that's what Gemara is going to go on to say now. Tanan Abanan. Gimo Chaloyim Chola Elisha. Elisha and his wife was sick three times. One time because of this, because he incited bears against the children, with everything that we said, they were Rishoyim, and they didn't have a trace of mitzvahs, and they were even conceived by Veda, b'chola, nevertheless, they're fourth Yidin, and he shouldn't have done this, and therefore, and on his level, it was considered something wrong, and therefore, he was punished for a while with sickness. You could also say, I guess maybe we could say, it's not even a punishment, you could even learn maybe that Elisha himself afterwards felt bad, and he himself like brought the sickness on himself because he felt so bad, about it. Let's clean that up. The echad shadoch with the geichazi b'shtei yadav. A second one is because he pushed geichazi away with both hands, which the Gemara will tell the story in the next piece about how when Gehazi took things from Naaman that he wasn't supposed to, then Elisha completely kicked him out of his Beis Medrash and out of his life, and he shouldn't have done that. He should have been, as the Gemara was going to go on to say, Smil Durcha V'Yimin Mekareves, V'Echad Shemesba, and then there was the third sickness that Elisha had before he passed away, Shenema, V'Elisha Cholas Choya, Shiyom Usboi, as the Pasuk says, that Elisha was sick with the sickness and with which he died. So Rashi explains, Chola represents one sickness, Choya is a second, and Shiyom Usboi is the third. Elsewhere, where the Gemara brings this, Rashi explains that rather the limud is just from the fact that it says Asher Yomus Boy, implying that there were previous illnesses from which he had not died. The Medrash actually, by the way, mentions that Elisha was the first one to have dangerous illnesses and then recover from them. Up until that point, a person was dangerously sick. It would be like, yeah, ever since Yaakov, you know, a person was sick before he died. Before that, a person would sneeze and he'd die, b'chola. But up to Elisha's times, yeah, if a person is sick with some kind of deathly illness like that, then that's it. He's going to end up dying. Elisha was the first one to actually recover from such a thing and to have that happen multiple times. So here we're saying one of those was because of the thing with the bears, because with all that he had justifications, as we learned before. Nevertheless, they were still Jewish children. As you said, they were Na'orim, they were Yolodim, whatever we call them. They fought in a way they couldn't have known better, especially with the kind of chinuch or lack thereof that evidently they got, and therefore he shouldn't have been so harsh with them.
He could
have davened for them. He could have, yeah. Anyway, the point is, again, the Gemara had brought that whole point in because the point was, again, if the people of Yericho had thought to be Malava of Elisha in the first place, then the whole thing never would have happened. All right, Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Lamed Sivan, first day of Rosh Chodesh. So the Rebbe was talking on Shabbos Parshas Mishpatim, Tavshin Nun Beis, where during the few days before that, the Russian president or prime minister, whatever the title is exactly, and the United States president had gotten together and had official talks about a new era in the relationships between their countries, where the Cold War is over and now we're going to start cooperating on matters of defense and limiting on getting rid of a lot of armaments and so on and so forth. So making peace. So this is the whole idea of it as a foretaste of Yemos HaMashiach, the Chitasu Chavosim Le'itim, that they're going to be beating and then turning their swords into plow blades. And similarly over here, they're going to take all that technology and be using it for peaceful purposes. As the Pasuk describes, Eretz Mimena Yetzer Lechem, you have land where bread comes forth from it. So now they're turning it into using technology for farming and things like that. So it was a clear sign of that being fulfilled, and another preparation, another stage of preparation for the Gula Mitzvah Shleimah with Mashiach Tzidkenu. Yad Mamash. What it means that it's another sort of a century since then. That's, I don't know. All right, onward with Hilchos Yom Tov. You have a stove, and you have a stove, or you're talking about ashes over here. So nowadays, I guess we'd be talking more like a grill or something. So the ashes from that, you're allowed to move on Yom Tov because you can conceivably use ashes for various purposes on Yom Tov. For example, you have filth or spit or something like that. You can use ashes to cover it. The Alter Rebbe does stress, though, you wouldn't be allowed to if there are coals in it, that there are still live coals in it, then that would be a problem, because then moving them around is going to extinguish them. That's if the fire was made out of Yom Tov, and now coming into Yom Tov, you have the ashes there already, then they're considered mukhan. If the fire was made on Yom Tov itself, so then it depends. If the ashes are still warm enough that conceivably you could bury an egg in there and boil it, then it's allowed, because then the ashes still have a function. But if they're cold, then it's considered nolad, because now, yesterday it was wood, now it's ashes, so it's even worse than muktzah, and therefore would actually be also, then therefore those ashes would actually be also betiltal altogether.
That's great.